Well, I don't know if you know it or not, but today, January 25th, is the most depressing day of the year. Isn't that great? Now, I suppose that's especially true if you're a Minnesota Vikings fan or a New York Jets fan. Or I could go further, but I won't. But that's what they said. I heard this on the news yesterday, that today was the most depressing day of the year. It's a Monday. It's the middle of the winter, I guess. Supposedly, on Fox News, they had some psychiatrist come on. He gave five ways to not be depressed. Well, I think most depression comes from a lack of contentment. I mean, that's not an unusual statement. I think you'd probably agree with that. There's a little poem that says, "We fill our lives with meaningless things in the hope that contentment it brings. It pleases us but for a short while, but very soon we no longer smile." And then maybe you heard this story about a beggar who was standing at a street corner talking to one of his buddies, and he said, "If I only had $100, I would never complain again." Well, a businessman happened to be walking by, and he overheard their conversation, and he said, did I hear you say if you had $100, you would never complain again?" The beggar said, "You heard me right, mister." So the man, he pulled out his wallet, he handed him a $100 bill, and he said, "I'm glad I can have a small part in bringing happiness to the world." And after the man walked away, the beggar turned to his friends and remarked, "I wish I'd asked for $200. Discontentment points us to a place where God is not leading. You believe that? Discontentment points us to a place where God isn't leading. I think most of us are guilty of a lack of contentment because the circumstances of our lives or whatever the case may be. We often think, "Boy, why can't I have what that person has? Why can't I be like that person? Why can't I sing like that person? Why can't I play guitar like Daniel plays, okay? Why can't I, why can't my spouse be like his spouse?" Or, you know, we all think these things, whether we want to admit it or not. It's true. And I think a cure for discontentment is doing our duty with this little phrase at the end, "no matter what." And there are some great women in history who could have been discontented with their lives and simply complained or quit. There's a lot of great men as well, but I focus on a woman today because of my message. I'm going to focus on three women from the Bible. But I got an example of a woman who, under duress, had compassion, care, and courage. And it's a lady named Harriet Tubman. You may or may not have read about her in history. She was called the Moses of her people. And let me just read to you, just take a couple minutes. I'm going to read quickly a little bit about the history of Harriet Tubman. Born in 1820 in a cold, dark, windowless slave shanty in the Bucktown Plantation owned by Edward Brodus in Dorchester County, Maryland's Eastern Shore. She was the daughter of black slaves, Benjamin Ross and Harriet Green, and was originally named Armita by her master. As she defied slavery and its customs, she later changed her name to Harriet after her mother. During her childhood, Harriet sustained a serious head injury when an angry overseer tossed a 2-pound weight at her, striking her in her forehead. The injury nearly killed her, but it caused her to have problems the rest of her life. The injury left an ugly scar that throughout her life reminded her of the horrors suffered as a slave. Being raised as a slave, she had to perform extremely hard work, and as such, she acquired unusual strength. Because she was forced to work as a slave, Harriet did not have the opportunity to attend school. But she did, however, possess an innate intelligence with remarkable foresight and judgment. One day, determined to trace her roots, she hired a lawyer at the cost of $5 to trace the will of her mother's first master. In doing so, a will was found that gave her mother, Harriet Green, to an heir named Mary Patterson. The will provided that Mrs. Green, Harriet's mother, was to serve Mary Patterson until she was 45 years old. However, Patterson died before she reached this age and was unmarried. Because there was no provision in the will concerning Harriet Green upon Patterson's death, she was therefore free. Unfortunately, no one told Mrs. Green of this right. Consequently, she and her children remained enslaved. Harriet Tubman, now armed with this information, was more than ever determined to be free. Having spent her first 29 years as a slave plantation hand, in 1849, upon the death of her master, she learned that she was to be sold to the Deep South. Determined not to be sold, Harriet, along with her two brothers, escaped. Guided by the North Star on her journey to freedom, She was also aided by the Underground Railroad, which was a secret network of safe houses created to help escaping slaves. Two of the principal conductors of the Underground Railroad who aided Harriet were Ezekiel Hunn and Thomas Garrett, both of Delaware. Along the journey, her two brothers returned to Maryland, but Harriet continued and arrived in Philadelphia, changed her name to Harriet, after her mother, and worked for about a year to earn money. She then left Philadelphia and returned to Maryland. Once in Maryland, she disguised herself as a man in an attempt to find her husband to bring him back to the North with her. Upon finding her husband, she found out that he had married another woman. Devastated by this news, she set her mind and determination, devoting her life to freeing other slaves. With her newfound freedom obtained in Philadelphia, where slavery was outlawed, Harriet found little solace in her freedom, while the masses of her race remained enslaved. Consequently, she spent the next 10 years serving as a conductor herself on the Underground Railroad. She made more than 20 trips rescuing over 300 slaves. Upon arriving at her destination, she frequently worked as a cook, dressmaker, a laundress, or whatever she could do to earn money to sustain the fugitive slaves. Both black and white abolitionists praised her as the Moses of her people. She became widely respected and was honored by such noteworthy persons as Frederick Douglass, Susan B. Anthony, and Ralph Waldo Emerson. Similarly, slaveholders and other pro-slavery advocates hated her in the South. Despite the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 that provided for harsh treatment, and also not even the $40,000 bounty that was on her life for her arrest, dead or alive, it wouldn't stop Harriet. In 1857, she performed the unconceivable mission of freeing both of her aged parents, and she took them back to a home that she had purchased in New York. In 1858, Harriet traveled to Canada, where she had an opportunity to meet John Brown, a friendship developed by which Brown referred to her as General Tubman. And I think I can just kind of think about that when you think about that dear lady. He said, "Harriet's one of the bravest persons on this continent." When the Civil War began, she without delay asserted her right to participate. Armed with a letter from John Andrew, the governor of Massachusetts, she traveled to Hilton Head, South Carolina, where she reported to General David Hunter. Here she worked in the Union Army as a scout, a spy, a nurse, and a cook. She continued this activity throughout the war, and in 1865, near the war's end, she briefly worked at a freedman's hospital in Fortress Monroe, Virginia. Harriet Tubman was a woman of greatness who represented nearly a century of struggle and difficulties fighting slavery toward the goal of social justice. Harriet did her duty rather than just be discontented with her state in life. She did her duty under duress, and that's what I want to talk about this morning. Duty under duress. Today, I want to quickly share with you three women in the Bible who did their duty even under duress: a widow, a slave, and a queen. You see, doing our duty is all of our responsibility, not just the blessed or the wealthy or even the poor or the downtrodden. All Christians are to serve Christ with all diligence at all times, under all circumstances. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter whether you're born into high standing or into low standing. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter whether you're short or tall, or you come from a godly family or a wicked family. It doesn't matter if you're married or unmarried. It doesn't matter if you're popular or unpopular. It doesn't matter if you're an American or if you're from another country. It doesn't matter if you have fashionable clothes or you don't, if you have a car or not, if you like your roommate or not, if you live in the new dorm or the old dorm, if you're black or white or red or brown or yellow. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you can sing. It doesn't matter if you were born a slave, if you become a widow, or if you're even a queen. It doesn't matter. All Christians are to serve Christ with all diligence at all times under all circumstances. You and I may not. No, I probably should change that. You and I will not have control over all the circumstances of our life or the things that we might face. I want you to note the way each of these women demonstrated they're doing their duty under duress. Each stood tall when the test came and did it with grace, humility, and quietness. The first one is the widow Ruth. She took a risk to leave her homeland, and you know the story. She's one of the most lovable women in the Bible, enduring love. We note her for the enduring love that she had for her mother-in-law. She was modest and meek and courteous and loyal and responsible and gentle, but she was decisive. Ruth always seemed to do the right thing at the right time. Turn to Ruth chapter 1, and we're just going to look at a couple of verses in each of these cases because I know you're very familiar with these stories. The reason that Ruth served under duress is because she was childless, which, you know, today we might not think of that being so important, but back in those days, trust me, this was life-threatening because the only way you were able to sustain yourself once you became older, especially as a widow, was if you had someone to take care of you, a child who grew up and would then take care of you. And I think you know the story of Ruth, how that there was Elimelech and Naomi who left the homeland of Israel and went to Moab, and there they had two sons named Mahlon and Chilion, and they married two girls, Orpah and Ruth. And then, you know, if things weren't bad, that they're already out of their homeland, then Elimelech dies, and then Mahlon and Chilion dies. So now we've got three ladies, all widows, with nothing left but no food to eat. And so Naomi decided to go back to her homeland. Maybe there she'd find some food. And she told the two girls just to stay where they were. They'd be better off with their own families. And that's what Orpah did. She stayed. But Ruth decided to go. And as hard as Naomi tried to talk her out of going, Ruth decided to go. Look at verse 16 of chapter 1. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God. Where thou diest will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if aught but death part thee and me." When she saw that she was thus steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. Now, here's a young lady who was basically homeless. She was childless. She was a widow. She was talking about leaving the only place she knew. And yet she did not swerve from doing what she felt God wanted her to do, what she felt her calling was to do. She never swerved from her unselfish purpose during the many trials she faced. And it didn't matter that she didn't have a husband any longer. It didn't matter that she didn't know how she was going to survive in a land that she didn't know anything about. It didn't matter to her that she didn't have children. Those things didn't matter. She made her mind up in spite of the difficult situation she was in, and many people would have become discontent and probably blamed God or just gotten upset or whatever they would have done. But she didn't do that. Her response was instead compassion. She loved her mother-in-law. She loved her mother-in-law's God. She had concern for her. She wanted to take care of her, and she had courage to do something that many of us probably wouldn't have been able to do. Ruth was beloved by all because she did her duty no matter what her circumstances in life were. Could you have done that? Now, what the result was, well, guess what? She had a child, didn't she? God worked it all out in His sovereign plan. One of the most beautiful love stories you'll ever read or know anything about is how God worked out this miracle for Ruth to get married because she was willing to do her duty in the difficult situation. You know that she went and she served her mother-in-law faithfully. She went out and gathered grain that was dropped as they would be doing the harvest time, and a young man or a man named Boaz noticed her, and I don't know if it was love at first sight or what happened there, but the point is he took an interest in her, and eventually, of course, you know the story how that she got married. They got married. And not only did she have a child, which is a miracle all of its own, because now she's going to have someone to take care of her when she gets old. But that child just happened to be a very special child. His name was Obed. And if you take a look sometime in Matthew chapter 1, verse 5, you'll see his name's mentioned in the genealogy of Christ. Isn't that a miracle? We never know what, by just doing our duty, even under the difficult situations that we face, how God might use that to change the world, to change a life, to change someone, to bring someone to Christ. And so we see Ruth, and we see the tremendous impact that she had by taking a risk to leave her homeland, to go somewhere else where it seemed there would be no hope. Second one, let's look at the little maid. Go now to 2 Kings chapter 5. Here we have the little maid of Israel. She took a risk that God would heal Naaman. And I think, again, you probably know the story here in Naaman chapter, or 2 Kings chapter 5. Let's look at the first few verses. 2 Kings 5, verse 1. Now Naaman, captain of the host of the king of Syria, was a great man with his master and honorable because by him the Lord had given deliverance unto Syria. He was also a mighty man in valor, but he was a leper. And the Syrians had gone out by companies and had brought away captive out of the land of Israel a little maid, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said unto her mistress, "Would God my Lord were with the prophet that is in Samaria, for he would recover him of his leprosy." Now, it may seem like not that big a deal, but wow, that's quite a statement, isn't it, by a little girl. A little girl that, by the way, was homeless, orphaned. She was also outside of Israel, and she was a slave. What hope did she have? What future did she expect to get? I don't know if her parents maybe were killed. Who knows what the situation was there. But here she was, a little girl with a big heart to do something for God. Even under the difficult circumstances she was in, even under the circumstances that would have caused most of us to be very discontent and full of complaining and full of woe is me, her master gets leprosy, which is an awful disease that was not curable and it was pretty much the ruin of his life. She hears about that, and instead of thinking, like maybe I might have thought, you deserve it. Boy, it's about time something happened good around here. You ever hear people talk like that? Nope. What does she say? Oh, I wish you could just go see the prophet in Israel. He could take care of that. He could heal you. I mean, what an incredible story that this young lady would be willing to say that. I mean, she could have lost her life just for that. Suppose it didn't work out, right? I mean, suppose Naaman goes and Elisha doesn't heal him. He's going to come back and he's going to, you know, knock her, take care of her, you know. So she was willing to do that, though she was homeless, though she was orphaned, though she was outside of Israel, though she was a slave. She was exactly the opposite kind of person that Naaman was. You know, she was lowly and meek. He was majestic, the Bible tells us. He was a mighty man of valor. She was compassionate. I have a feeling Naaman probably had very little compassion in his bones. Why should anybody be compassionate for him? She cared about others. I think Naaman only cared about himself. She was courageous, though helpless. Naaman was scared, though courageous. And I think that speaks to the difference. And you know what? We can all be in that same exact situation in our lives. Maybe today, maybe this week, maybe this month, something's going to happen and you're going to be scared. But we can still be courageous because God is going to lead us through that difficult situation. Unless we sit around and gripe and complain about it or have a pity party on ourselves because of the circumstances of our life. The little maid was humble. Naaman was prideful. We see that in the story when he didn't want to go dip in the muddy Jordan. He wanted to go find a nice clean river that was up in Syria, Parfar and Abana, I think, were the two rivers. He wanted to go up there because they were nice and clean. The Jordan was muddy. He was prideful. She was loving. He was unloving. The little maid demonstrated unconditional love in the midst of a very difficult circumstance in life. Here was Naaman. He had everything in life you could want, so to speak, and he only had conditional love. So it didn't matter. It didn't matter that she was taken into slavery and taken away from her homeland, taken away from her family, probably barely eking out her survival. It didn't matter. She was going to do what was right. I wonder if we would have responded that way. Instead, she responded with compassion, concern, care and courage, just like Ruth. And of course, what's the results? Well, we all know the rest of the story. Of course, I love this story because Naaman, the king sends Naaman to go find Elisha, and he sends a pot of gold along as well, you know, all kinds of money and I can just see, you know, this entourage pulling up in front of Elisha's little. He's probably got just like a little shack, you know, and here's this guy riding like in a Cadillac chariot probably, okay, pulling up there, you know, with all this stuff. And he's thinking, I'm going to give this guy all this money and I'm going to impress him and he's going to cure me. And I love it because Elisha, he knows what's going on. He sends his servant Gehazi and says, just go tell him to jump in the Jordan River. And Naaman's all upset. He's like, come on, I thought you were going to wave your magic wand or, you know, do something like that, you know, go slay a dragon or something, you know. And but he says, nope, just go do it. And, of course, he did, and he was healed. And so not only was Naaman healed, that's not only the result, but also God was glorified. And the verse tells us here in verse, let me see if I can find it here, verse 16. Let's see, no, I lost it here. There's a verse in here that says verse 15, sorry, pardon me. He said right in the middle of the verse, behold, now I know that there is no God in all the earth but in Israel. That's enough, okay? You get it? Get the picture? God was glorified, wasn't he, okay? And then the last one is the Queen Esther. And that's in, of course, the book of Esther. And it's a very interesting book because Esther is a central figure in what is one, maybe in some people's mind, a controversial book in the Old Testament because the name of God never appears once in the book of Esther, yet we see his sovereignty in all of it. Its significance and importance to Jewish history stems from the fact that it has become a patriotic symbol to a persecuted people of the ultimate triumph of truth and justice. Well, I'll bet you Harriet Tubman would have loved to have read the story of Esther. You know, maybe she did, okay? The grace and courage of Esther becomes a dominating factor in the salvation of her people. So the problem this time not was that she was a slave or put down. She was crowned as the queen. How can that be a problem? She was raised to a high stature of life. And from an orphan Jewish in a foreign land, she rises to a position of queen of amazing power and a power that she manages to use wisely. And you all know the story here, again, of Haman's plot. You remember how her uncle Mordecai didn't bow down to Haman because Haman was so full of pride and so full of himself. And so Haman decided he was going to hate all Jews and he was going to kill all the Jews. Of course, he didn't know Esther was a Jew because she hadn't told anybody. And we all know the story. Look at chapter 4, and we'll move here quickly to verse 13. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther because Esther's trying to figure out what to do. Haman's going to kill all the Jews. What should I do? So Mordecai said to her in verse 13, think not that thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall the enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed, and who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? And so Esther bade them to return to Mordecai this answer, go gather all the Jews that are present in Shushan and fast for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. And all my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go into the king, which is not according to the law, and if I perish, I perish. It didn't matter that she might die. It didn't matter that if she stepped into the presence of the king and he didn't want anything to do with her, he could kill her. Those things didn't matter to her. What mattered to her was doing the duty that God had called her to do and to stand up for what was right, and she did. And we know the response. She did it with compassion, concern, and care, and courage. And you know that because of that, the enemy was conquered. And Israel was delivered, and now there's a feast that they have still today in the nation of Israel, in a lot of places. They have the feast that they celebrate, Purim. It's because of the deliverance that God provided. Esther was beloved by all because she did her duty no matter what her circumstances in life were. Obedience to the Lord in each person is our duty. It doesn't matter our standing in life. It doesn't matter the duress that we might be under or the contentment or the discontentment that we might be facing. We have to face our duty with compassion and concern and care and courage and grace and not become a person that is bitter or depressed or discontented with our life. It doesn't matter whether we're a widow or a slave or a queen or an ABC student or an ABC faculty member or staff member or the president of a Bible college or a vice president for academics. It doesn't matter what our position in life is. We're called to do our duty, and we're called to do our duty with diligence, even under duress. Remember, all Christians are to serve Christ with all diligence at all times and under all circumstances. Let me just close with a story that I think I've shared once before, but I think it illustrates this very well. A lady named Charlotte Elliott was a bedridden invalid for 37 years, a devoted Christian with a deep longing to do something for her Lord. But what could she do? She was in bed. She couldn't even get out of her bed. She could have easily become discontented with her life, but no, it didn't matter. From her bed of affliction, she gave the world one of the greatest songs ever written. Perhaps more people have walked the aisle to trust Christ as Savior, accompanied by the invitation hymn, "Just as I Am," without one plea. That's the song that Charlotte Elliott wrote as a bedridden invalid. You see, it didn't matter. It didn't matter. So let me ask you, what's your excuse? Let's pray. Father, thank you for the opportunity to quickly think about these three lovely ladies in the Bible who gave their lives to you even under difficult circumstances. Rather than becoming discontented with their situation in life, they determined it didn't matter, and they did their duty. Lord, may that be an example to you, to each of us, and to me today as we have the opportunity to serve you this week. In Jesus' name, amen.